honestly, there was something about just the gentle, sweet adventure and the idea of communication and empathy and all that stuff that I hadn't really been out of the mire of, you know, intergalactic threats for a while. So I like the idea of a return to the kind of movie that I grew up watching when I was a kid.
That was Robert Downey Jr. talking about his new film, Doolittle. I'm Neil Rosen. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies. I'm joined, as always, by Bill Bregoli.
If I had a penny for every one of these podcasts we do, I'd have $2. Because this is our 200th.
Is it really?
Wow.
Wow. Wow. And Bill McCuddy is here.
That's the sound of one man clapping. Yeah, I'm here, too, to talk about how Doolittle will do little to help Robert Downey Jr.
I wish I would have known this was the 200th thing. I would have, if I knew you were coming,
you'd
I would
have worn something
cake.
Different.
Hey, what's going on with Robert? Before we talk about this movie, what's going on with Robert Downey Jr.? I mean, the guy used to make, like, he was Chaplin. He got nominated for Academy Awards. He did, like, a lot of, like, interesting stuff. And, I mean, is it all about the money now? I mean, it's a kid's film. It's Doolittle. It's, like, Iron Man. It's, The Sherlock Holmes. I mean, it's all these big budget. They're going to pay him a gazillion dollars to do each movie. Didn't he do Fur? Remember that movie Fur? That was when he came out of
prison. It wasn't a huge part for him, but.
No, but he came out of prison and. No, not in Fur. I mean, in real life. And nobody wanted to put him in movies. So he was doing these low budget, independent, artsy kind of films. Then all of a sudden.
Two Girls and a Guy.
The guy? Jon Favreau. The studio didn't want to insure him to do the first Iron Man movie, and he said, no, I want Robert Downey Jr., and since that movie was made so much money, then he went back into the fray. I understand his wife controls his whole career anyway.
Yeah, she's the manager. She sobered him up. She got him the best deals, and they... Deborah, I think, or Diane, she's the brains of the outfit. Well, although he's a super smart guy. I mean, I listen to him on long format shows like Howard Stern.
Yeah, he did a Stern thing.
Yeah, and he's like, not stupid.
No, I met his father.
Oh.
Robert Downey Sr. Right. Years ago. Yeah. He came, I don't know, we had to interview him for
Is
something.
Is he still around?
He might still. This was like 20 years ago that I met him. And then, of all people, Kathy Moriarty, my sweetheart, showed up that afternoon because she was in the neighborhood and heard he was around. And the three of us just chatted for like 2 hours. They were very nice people.
It was a big deal. I mean,
yeah, he was cool.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you know, you don't see Robert Downey Jr. doing movies like The Pickup Artist anymore or any kind of, you know, anything of, you know.
I bet
he's not doing any movies that interest me, let's say, like Chaplin or, you know, he used to do just interesting grown-up films.
And well, we have not seen this, but
Except
Bill has.
I have.
So tell us whether we want to see it or not.
He's a physician who talks to animals, and he's a widow now, and in hiding. He's turned into a recluse. He's grown a beard, and someone sneaks into his compound where he's been living alone and tells him, hey, you've got to help save the queen's life. And in order to do that...
Elton John?
No, the queen of something. I don't know if she was Queen Victoria or what her name was, but this is around that time. So he gets on a boat and looks for a plant that will cure the queen and has a lot of help from animals along the way. There were 21 days of reshoots on this movie. And when you watch it, you look at his lips.
Is that in the press notes?
No, but I found that out. And I also watched his lips and listened to it and said, this is all looped. All his dialogue appears to be looped.
Well, that's because I'm guessing every scene he's in has CGI in it and is like
not every,
he's surrounded
really?
By talking animals. So
I don't know. I got a feeling he decided on a different accent like halfway through the movie or something.
Oh, that's funny. That's a good theory.
Yeah.
Well, are all the animals CGI'd?
Yeah, they are all CGI.
They're all CGI.
And
there's
all
no
voiced,
real dog walking around.
Not that I could tell.
Okay.
And this is
that's
young,
how good it is. You can't really
there's a
tell.
Young, there's a young boy in the movie, and... Halfway through the movie, he appears to have aged a bit, and then they go back to the beginning of the film, which was shot around the same time as, I mean, they go back to the end of the film, and he seems to be younger again. I think all the England scenes were shot first, and then this kid grew up, and they shot the middle during reshoots, and he became a teenager, and then he's sort of like a pre-adolescent in the beginning and the end.
Oh, wow.
So there are problems with this movie, and
okay,
little kids that I watched it with did pay attention to it. especially the one in back in front of me who kept rocking his seat back and forth. Maybe he was had a special needs kid or something, but he was having fun. But and some adults behind me chuckled, but I didn't laugh once.
Well, is it a comedy? Is it supposed to be a comedy?
Yeah.
I mean, look, there was the original Dr. Dolittle with Rex Harrison.
Right.
When I could talk, if I could talk.
Yeah, that, by the way, that song is not in this movie.
Good, thank goodness. Okay, then you had the, sadly, which I thought was great. Not that, they made two of them, but the original, the first one with Eddie Murphy, I was really pleasantly surprised, and I thought it was very funny and well done. And, I mean, my daughter was very young at the time, and I took her, and we just had a really great time. So I thought that was terrific. Then I believe they made a sequel to that. I did not see the sequel to the Eddie Murphy, Dr. Dolittle 2. But how would this Dolittle compare to all the Dr. Dolittles? And do we really need another Dr. Dolittle?
Come on, you can get three or four more questions in there.
All right.
I'll Let me think that one
and
over.
And does Dr. Dolittle outfit? No, seriously.
It's very missable. Forget
our
it.
Colleague Roger Friedman says it's getting cats-like reviews, like scathing.
Really? Yeah, I believe it. Yeah. It was pretty bad. Well,
Cats has now become like an Ishtar Showgirls punchline.
Oh, Waterworld.
If you watch late night shows, it's like it's become the punchline to jokes. They're like, that was a real bad, not as bad as Cat. You know, it's like it's become, Cats has become like the
punchline.
Now and for never.
Yeah. But I think it's going to be, I think Cats will become one of these movies where, not that it'll get a cult following in terms of it being good, but I think people like Showgirls for a while will just watch it and just be in awe of how horrible it is. And, you know, when it comes out on, you know, streaming or something like that. But you never know. All right. So to play our game, you've convinced me, not that I had any interest in seeing this, but I'm not, I have no interest. I certainly have no interest in seeing this now. McCuddy?
No. And no.
Okay. No. Don't.
All right. Well, Bill Bregoli also saw the movie with, called Like a Boss with
Rose Byrne and Salma Hayek and Tiffany Haddish.
Tiffany Haddish.
Also Billy Porter and Jennifer Coolidge.
All right. Now, before you... before you tell us about all this movie, which I'd like to hear, we're going to tell you, tell the audience that this is January, and January is a dumping ground. Like all the great movies they release in October, November, and December, and January is kind of like they've been on the shelf, and let's just kind of throw it out in January. So Dolittle might be a good example of that. Is Like a Boss kind of an example of that?
Yeah, that one too. Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Oh, Bregoli. Good. I get to now.
Yeah, I'll shut up.
All right.
Wait, I'll talk for a while.
Rose Byrne and Tiffany Haddish are lifelong friends who decide to open a cosmetics company together.
Based on a true story?
Or? Not at all.
Okay.
And Tiffany Haddish is a spendthrift of the two, and likes spending what little money their company makes on the finer things in life. And Rose Byrne's sort of the bookkeeper and realizes that they're about $500,000 in debt. Uh-oh. They have two employees, played by Jennifer Coolidge and Billy Porter, and they don't want to break the news to them that the company's about to go under. And all of a sudden, they get interest from a cosmetics tycoon played by Salma Hayek.
Wow.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, there are all these breast jokes that show up because Salma Hayek's in it.
You're kidding me.
No, I mean, the woman.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. They make a joint like your pretty little head. And she says, my head is not small. It's just that my breasts are enormous. That's a joke in the movie.
Wow.
And
some ice for my ribs. That's too funny.
Yeah.
Well, the commercial looks terrible.
And it is terrible.
Tiffany Haddish is
poor Jennifer Coolidge is there. I mean, she's so talented, and she hasn't got a decent line, except maybe one line in the whole movie. Billy Porter has one scene that he's good in, and the rest of it is just entirely predictable.
What's Billy Porter's role? Is
he's sort of the gay...
He's gay. He plays a gay character?
Yeah, he does.
Oh.
Is he in a dress better than the one he wore at...
No. He's very, very... nice couture in this. Not dresses. He's done up nice, and he has a scene where he gets fired, and that scene is really funny with him in it, but the rest of it is pretty dull.
What's happened to Tiffany Haddish? This was the most promising star in the last like two or three years.
So Tiffany Haddish she was as you are also part time. She was full time. She's a stand up comic, and she had a killer appearance a number of years ago on Jimmy Kimmel, where it went viral on YouTube, and she told this whole story about when she was filming that movie with Jada Pinkett Smith and
girl party or something. I can't remember.
You know, and she went on a trip. On a Groupon yeah. thing. It was a hilarious. It didn't
with Will
sound
Smith
like,
and Jada Pinkett Smith.
It didn't even sound like she was. Later, I saw one of her specials and she did the bit, and I didn't realize it was her bit, but she delivered it so naturally on the couch in the interview with Jimmy Kimmel.
No, that's totally from her.
Right, that you just thought she was just telling a story, even though you know that pre-interview. But I didn't realize it was a polished bit, and that led to a lot of stuff. And to your point, McCuddy, she was, yes, it was very promising. So what happened? I mean, she's been put in a lot of movies. Maybe, you know, she was struggling to have a movie career for many, many years. So maybe she just accepted everything that was thrown at her. And a lot of these things weren't fully fleshed out and good. I mean, I still think she's talented, but I don't think she's found this great movie.
The writing in it is the problem. It's written by two guys.
Here's
a movie about female empowerment written by two guys. It's not going to always work.
Yeah, and Rose Byrne is another one who's so great in Spy and so great in everything she does.
Neighbors, I love her. She was good. She's always good. Bridesmaids, always good.
But, you know, I think your theory is correct. They're just saying yes to too many things. And what was Night School with Kevin Hart? Jesus, that was terrible.
These movies all just came
and that
and
might
went
be
a like
TV
a
series.
Yeah. Yeah. What is it? I think it's Chris Rock who says all black films are the name of a place, barbershop, cookout,
night school. Yeah.
Well, David Allen, I wish I could do this bit because I can't. But David Allen Greer once had this great bit that all black people's names sound like medications. And he starts rattling off like a dozen meds.
Plavix, get down here. It's time for dinner.
No, these are like, I don't know. YouTube it. It's David Allen Greer on Adam Carolla's talk show. So you could YouTube David Allen Greer.
I think they got
Adam Carolla. Yeah, medication bit. Yeah. It's really, really funny, you know? Hey, Levitra. Get down here.
Right.
get your ass down here. You don't talk, you know, but it's all these it's very, very funny. Mm-hmm. And there was another person on this podcast with Adam Carolla, and they're all just like dying of laughter. It's a really great
I don't know if you can do that bit anymore. I don't know if you can do any bit anymore.
Well, he could do it. I mean, I guess. I mean, isn't it like if you're Jewish, you could do the Jewish joke? You know, if you're
supposedly.
I don't know.
That's been the past. That's been the.
That's been the thing. Yeah. Well, anyway.
I'm not seeing that movie.
No.
Okay. So we had a. not seeing that movie either.
Here's one that we both like that I think you'll like because, and I'm not sure. Did it get any love this week from?
No, it didn't.
So this is called Portrait of a Woman on Fire.
A Lady on Fire.
Portrait of a Lady.
Portrait of a Lady
on Fire.
Lady.
And when I tell you the setup, which is basically a...
This is a documentary?
No.
It is actually a feature film.
Yeah, it's a period...
it takes place in the late 1700s on the Isle of Brittany.
Yeah, and there's a woman who is hired to come and paint another woman. And she doesn't want to be painted, so she has to.
Now,
pretend.
The way you're making it sound, it's like she's being body painted.
No. She's a portrait painter.
Yes. And it's set in what era?
I think he just said the late
1700s. The late 1700s. Right, so back in those days, they didn't have photography, so people were hired to paint portraits to show to suitors.
In arranged marriages.
In arranged marriages.
Before they decided.
Because they're all arranged in those days.
And this woman didn't like the last...
That sounds like a great concept.
It is a great concept, actually. And it's it sets the stage for a little lesbian action, which is not the reason to see this film, although there is that. But it's not... It's not gratuitous.
Not
at all. I think the film is really well made, and I'm surprised it hasn't gotten a little more attention.
Who's in it?
Why, you ask. It's directed by Celine Sciamma.
Celine Sciamma.
Well, no,
actually, she's made several films.
Several films.
Okay.
Yeah. Naomi Merlant and Adele Hanel.
Okay, so it's a subtitled film.
Yep.
In what language?
French. And there is a little Italian in it.
Okay.
As well.
And so just to recap this.
And the mom is somebody famous.
Why doesn't she want to get painted?
Yeah.
Why does she not?
She didn't like the last version. Well, first of all, she doesn't want the arranged marriage necessarily.
Yeah,
but I thought that
all comes out.
Okay. Yeah, no,
but
she
didn't like the last person that came to paint her.
Right. The person or the painting?
The painting and the person.
Okay. Yeah.
So they have to keep it a secret from her that this is her portrait's being painted. So the girl has to
spend time with her.
No, that's the challenge. She's not going
to
be able to sit.
No, she can't. She's actually told, we're telling her that you're taking her on walks, that you're a companion. And so when the two women are together, you can see this one woman just studying the other woman's face so she can go back and draw it later.
You know, and you like the movie.
I really like the movie.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah, I highly
recommend
it.
Okay, you sold me because even on the premise, like, unless you said, nah, so-so, but you're saying you like...
No, definitely.
I think the premise sounds great.
See it with Abby and see what she thinks.
Yeah, I'll see with my wife.
The explosions and the car chase come out of nowhere, but otherwise, it's really, really good.
Hey, Star Trek fans, I haven't seen it yet, but they just sent me the first few episodes of Picard, which is Patrick Stewart reprising his role as Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Is this another one that's only on CBS?
CBS All Access, but this is a highly... This might really boost... I mean, there are so many people that are into, you know, Star Trek The Next Generation, which I feel, I've said this previously, is the best of all the Star Trek series, that this might actually get CBS All Access a lot of subscribers. Where their past programs, original programs.
Well, they
had
a Star Trek thing when they launched,
yeah,
right?
Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, but that's not so good and nobody cares about it. This is bringing back, you know, their top show with their top captain, and they're all back.
We don't know it's a top show yet.
If you look at the trailer, Jonathan Frakes, who directed some of the Star Trek films and played number one in that Star Trek Next Generation, he's there. The guy who played Data, Brent Spiner, is in it, the one who played Counselor Troy is in it. So they're basically bringing back the predominantly, although it centers around Picard, hence the name Star Trek Picard, they're bringing back the cast. So I haven't seen any of the episodes yet, but next week I will be talking about that, and I'm excited to see it. You know, you guys knowing as nerdy as it is what a Star Trek fan I am. I did watch last podcast I got a response from one of our listeners, and thank you. I had watched the
whoever
first
that shut-in
episodes.
Is, we really appreciate it.
What's that?
Whoever that shut-in is, we really appreciate it.
I watched the last podcast. I said I watched the first couple of episodes of Fleabag, and my daughter and my wife were raving about it, and then it won the Golden Globe, and it just won the Critics' Choice Awards over the weekend. And you got to watch it. You got to watch it. And the listener said, first season good, which is what my wife and daughter said, second season great. And it's only six episodes a season, and each one's about 25 minutes, so it's not a big
time. Like Schitt's Creek, they're short and sweet.
It's not a big time commitment. So I watched this, and maybe it's like Parasite in a way, which I thought, unlike McCuddy, I thought it was okay, but I came late to the party, and it was overhyped for me, and I watched it, and I'm like, okay, you know, it's not the, I think it was overrated. I didn't really think it was great. I thought it was okay. I mean, there's nothing bad about it. I thought it was an okay series. I don't think it's worthy of beating The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel for best comedy.
And you still don't feel that way, having seen it all now. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm saying I don't think...
All right, calm down.
Yeah. Well, no, I couldn't have made the statement without having seen it.
You know what the doctor said about your blood pressure?
Well, I don't know. You love Barry, and there were other comedies.
You don't like Barry?
Haven't seen Barry. Got to watch Barry.
Way late on that.
But, you know, there are a lot of series in there. I mean, the one I'll reference point again is The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which I think...
That's been getting love, though. I don't have a problem with
that.
I
don't think Fleabag was worthy of
winning. You want it to be the Emmys where they give the same... Like, Frasier gets it for 12 years in a row? I think it's good they're spreading it around
a little. I don't mind that if another show wins. I just don't think Fleabag is better than a lot of those shows that were... I can't comment on Barry... But there were some other...
And the Critics' Choice gave Susie, she won from Maisel.
Oh, yeah, Susie always wins.
Well, she said she was surprised.
Yeah, what's her name? She was on Mad TV.
Yeah.
And she's the
voice...
You
look like a man.
She's the voice of the wife on Family Guy. She's very talented.
Yes.
Alex Borstein.
There you go.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. Didn't
and
look
I'm
going to
say he did not look that up.
I did
up,
not look it up.
Film.
Came out of my brain.
So that's empty now.
Yeah. I also started another Netflix show. Well, I saw all of Fleabag, which was Amazon, was not Netflix. I started a Netflix show. I saw the first episode, which also won the Critics' Choice Award, of When They See Us, which is about the Central Park Five, about the five African-American kids who were falsely accused in
now,
prison
that's supposed
for
to
many
be amazing.
Years,
and didn't Ava...
attacking the Central Park jogger. And I saw the first episode, which I think is phenomenal. It did win And I can't wait to watch
Was
the
that directed
ones.
By Ava DuVernay? DuVernay?
I think she's the creator. She's okay. the producer right. of the series. But
yeah, I hear that's amazing.
It's real good. I mean, you could just see in this
And
first
how many
episode,
is that?
It's five. Five episodes. And how they really... I mean, it's 1989. It's New York. And these kids clearly... I mean, anybody with half a brain, the way it's depicted in this anyway, could see that these kids had nothing to do with this. And they're just like, they're once 14, and it's like, you want to go home? You want to get out of here, kid? Just sign this that you did this. And he goes, what am I supposed to do? Just sign it, and you can go home, and everything will be fine. And they're just blatantly, like, bullshitting these kids just to frame them. It's, you know, again, I have to watch the remaining four episodes, but the first episode was so strong. And so far, that seems that was worthy of the win. You were going to talk about another movie, Bregoli.
Oh, I saw season three of The Crown. I finally.
Oh yeah.
Down.
Oh
yeah.
Now that's Netflix or Amazon?
That's Netflix.
Okay.
And there's a whole different cast this season around because it takes place in the 1960s. So Olivia Colman, last year's Oscar winner for best
from
actress.
Fleabag, right. And from the where did she play the lunatic?
The favorite.
The favorite, right? But the
right.
Looney Tunes
queen. She's the queen in this. And
do they want to move to Canada or California?
No, but they do
so it's
send...
It's not that topical.
Not that topical, but they send... Helena Bonham Carter is Princess Margaret. And she, at one point, is sent to America to try to get Lyndon Johnson to bail out Britain financially.
Oh, yeah, I forgot
And so
about
she
that.
Charms him. Yeah, so a lot of scenes like that. There's a guy named Josh O'Connor. He plays Prince Charles. And at one point, he's sent to Wales and has to learn Welsh because he's the Prince of Wales.
Isn't Helena Bonham nice. Carter in this thing?
Yeah, she is. As I said,
he just said that.
Yeah, she plays Princess Margaret, and she was sent to...
Yeah, I'm glad I'm paying attention.
And there's a young woman who I think everybody should watch for, named Erin Doherty, who plays Princess Anne in this. And she kind of sticks up for her brother, but she's very independent, and she's worth watching, too. So it's even though it's a whole different cast, they're still doing things very well.
Would a whole different cast be a reason for anyone who hasn't seen the first couple of seasons to just start this?
You could, actually, yeah.
Really?
Because, well, because it
you
takes
place... You
have
not seen the first
Not season. At all.
Me neither. And my, again, back to my wife and daughter, they love this thing. They're just like...
So it's a good question I asked.
It is a good
And I'm as stunned as you are.
And I think you could, actually. You could. But I would see the first two just
no, I know Claire Foy.
So
I mean,
well
I know
done,
the
yeah.
last cast right. was supposed to be amazing, and they were all worried that this was going to fuck it up.
No,
and it
this did not.
I have no objection to if, you know, unlike The Irishman, where De Niro's playing a 20, they're calling him the kid, as we've discussed in previous podcasts, you know, and with this de-aging stuff, and he looks like he's 55 instead of, what is
right.
he, how old is De Niro, 80, 70?
70s.
Yeah, I mean, why didn't they just cast
Actually,
a kid that looks like De Niro,
right?
Like what was that kid in Bronx Tale played his son?
Went to jail.
His name?
Yeah,
I don't remember.
I interviewed him too on a junket. Lilo Brocato. Again, yeah. I didn't look at
Boom.
Him.
Boom.
Yeah, get a kid that looks like De Niro. I mean, who gives a shit? Get a young, you know, have them. How often is that done?
But
in
that wasn't the toy that was dangled in front of
but
De Niro.
But that toy didn't
was
work.
That was the that.
That
was,
toy was a broken toy.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, they did not
as
look,
I said before, he looked like a Cabbage Patch
They
doll.
Do something very interesting in the very first episode of season three of The Crown, where the queen, now played by Olivia Colman and obviously older than Claire Foy, is posing for a portrait that they put on the money.
Oh.
And she looks at the picture and goes, pretty much to the effect of, they're saying, oh, you look so wonderful, you look so, she says, old. You know, and like an old bag. She makes fun of herself and how old she looks now. So they segue into it very nicely.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, where you'd probably rate the first two seasons of The Crown, what, you'd give it a 10 or a 9 or
yeah,
something like that?
This is right up there.
So same level.
Yeah.
The quality
and
is not
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
And what's interesting for people of our age is that we remember these events now because it starts in the 1960s. So
well,
it's,
you and I
it's
do, but Neil's a little sketchy.
Yeah.
Well, I remember back in the Roosevelt
some
era.
Some of these characters are like Prince Charles, now still alive. And you
oh.
Get, yeah, so you get to watch the young version of Prince Charles, and it's interesting because, face it, we all, especially as Americans, we only see him up couple times a year, you know, for a few seconds on TV. But it's interesting to see what he went through.
Speaking about The Crown, in the King's speech, has anybody been thinking about lately when? Because I keep thinking of the King's speech with the news with Meghan
Stutter Markle, Island. You mean
with Meghan Markle and Prince Harry wanting to leave the royal family and live in America somewhere? I kept thinking of the scene in the King's speech where the guy that was the heir apparent to the throne,
right.
the playboy heir apparent who wanted to marry a divorcee and move to America and told the stuttering guy played by Colin Firth, no, you be the... You know, I'm out of this. I don't want to have anything to do with the hierarchy.
The Duke
here.
Of Windsor, right? The guy that fell in love with.
But he lived his life.
Yeah, normally. And actually, he dies in season three of The Crown.
Oh, okay.
He dies.
But through this Harry Markle thing, I kept thinking of the King's Speech, where the guy was like, "Yeah, I'm marrying a divorced woman, and I don't want to have anything to do with this." And
they're going to make tons of money to come over here. It looks like anyway. So well, that's a whole nother podcast. But wait a minute. The more interesting thing out of what Bill has just said is that if there's a season four, are we going to meet?
Yes, we are. She's already been cast.
Are we going to meet Lady Di?
Yes, she's already been cast.
Yeah, that's going to be a little weird.
For the first time, I watched this David Spade show last night that comes on Comedy Central after The Daily Show with Trevor Noah.
And they were talking about Lady Di?
And they were talking about Meghan Markle. Okay. And they showed a clip, which a lot of talk shows were doing, about how Prince Harry recently was pitching... voiceover work for his trying to pitch to Robert Iger, who's the head of ABC Disney, for Meghan Markle. You know, she does voiceovers. They have this on video tape at a party. She's really good. She could do voiceovers. And Robert Iger's like, oh, okay. You know, so Jim Gaffigan, who was on the show, goes, so now Disney's going to take over the royal family, which I thought was really interesting. And Chris Hardwick was on the show as well as. Oh, what's the woman who the other comic, the female comic? She created a couple of television shows.
Whitney Cummings.
Whitney Cummings, yes. So Chris Hardwick goes, yeah, but isn't it perfect? All the Disney movies, the princesses are trapped in the castle and they're trying to escape, which I thought was...
Yeah, that is
very
funny.
That was very clever, you know, and I don't know whether that was thought out before, but it sounded very, like, off the cuff.
I've only seen that show once. Do you recommend it?
Well, last night you had, I mean, even David Spade goes, yeah, we got a bunch of nobodies on the show tonight. I mean, you had Jim Gaffigan and Whitney Cummings, Chris Hardwick and David Spade, and I thought it was great, but I do watch The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, and towards the end of the show, they have a little... you know, 10-second promo coming up on David, and they tell you the comics, and you usually don't know who they are. So it was so do I recommend it? If you have that, I'll watch another episode when there's a bunch of comics
okay,
I never heard of,
like,
you know. But David Spade was funny. And it's not a political show, which is interesting.
No, it's just a roundtable about what's going on.
You know what it
day.
Seems like to me? It seems like there was a show that was in that time slot many years ago that I
Colin
loved.
Quinn,
Colin
Quinn.
Tough Crowd with Colin Quinn.
Tough
that
Crowd,
had,
right. Jim Norton
a lot
was
of people
on
are
it.
Dead. Like, I mean, you had Greg Giraldo, who was brilliant, and you had... Patrice,
you know how they did that?
Patrice O'Neill, who Patrice also O'Neill. Passed.
You know how they did that show?
What?
You know how they did that show, and I wonder if it's how Spade does it.
How they did it?
Yeah, I mean, how it was created.
Okay, yes, it was the it was
they
the
met
table.
Every. They met that day. They met, like, from noon. They got lunch, and they met with Colin Quinn, and they started bullshitting, and they started going over what the top stories were going to be. Then they started saying, okay, you're going to do this, and you'll do this, and you'll say that.
Oh.
And that's how it's sort of like what... Larry David does with Curb Your Enthusiasm. They all have a rough idea of where they're going.
Curb Your Enthusiasm is returning
yes,
in a couple
it is.
Of weeks. You know, I think that Larry. I'll watch the episodes and we'll table the Curb Your Enthusiasm discussion till. But speaking of comedy,
yeah, I saw a couple of things this week that I wanted to talk about. People are always saying, "Get back to those." You used to do a video of the week or recommend a link or what. So. I was fascinated by the fact that the very reclusive to me, Lorne Michaels, who created Saturday Night Live.
Well, he's reclusive in terms, I mean, he does.
Well, he just doesn't do
doesn't
much.
Doesn't do interviews.
Do interviews. And he popped up in two places for me. And one was with Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with Seinfeld. Seinfeld picks him up in a 55.
I saw that episode on your recommendation.
Mercedes Gullwing at his Central Park West apartment. And
he was very personable, Lorne.
Yeah,
Michael,
he
much
was.
More than you'd think. You know?
He was. He's sort of this.
Talks
kind
about
of
writing
like
Three Amigos.
Michael Ovitz, when everybody thought he was mysterious when he was running Disney, and nobody. And then finally he started talking, and everybody's like, oh, that's the wizard behind the curtain at Oz.
Talks about, which, and I worked at NBC back in the day, then I'm back there now, but he goes, yeah, when I started Saturday Night Live in the mid 70s, he goes, there were deer roaming the hallway. And it's true. I mean, there were no shows. Like right now, if you go into 30 Rock, I mean, Late Night with Seth Meyers, The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, you've got the Today Show was always being done there. But I mean, there's so many shows.
MSNBC is there now too, and
right. MSNBC is there, and so Saturday Night Live is done there. And I mean, every studio is pretty much occupied doing stuff. And when I was there in that era, like I was an intern, all the studios were dark. They were like just empty shells.
He opens up a lot about what the beginning was like and who the big players were and who was difficult, and he does the same thing that on another Netflix show. That called Norm MacDonald has a show that started out as a
Ovid
podcast.
Story that you're telling me about, having watched the Seinfeld one, I don't remember the Ovid story. So maybe he didn't.
I was likening it to the guy like Michael
Ovitz. Oh, okay.
Ovitz.
I'm sorry.
That doesn't come up. Again, listening pays dividends in this show. Norm asks him a lot of like stuff about early and. He's friendly with Seinfeld. He's a little more adversarial with Norm MacDonald. Not much, but I mean, Norm also realizes what a big get Lauren is. And so he keeps asking him about 1970s and 70s. And finally,
Lauren was his boss. Right?
I know, but finally, Lauren goes, let's move it out of the 70s. And so for a second, they go to something current. And then he goes back to, what about the time when Billy Murray came on, and it's longer than the interview.
And this
with
is on
Seinfeld.
Netflix?
Yeah, Norm MacDonald has a show. Oh, it's what it's called.
Right, okay.
It's literally called Norm MacDonald has a show.
And we talked about this a couple of years ago on the podcast. Is it pretty much the same format as when he was doing that YouTube show?
It's almost identical to that.
He's got some guy I never heard of as a sidekick.
Yeah, Adam somebody, but who's a guest comic.
And they just kind of he gets a guest on and they just ramble and they just joke.
They had
the
Letterman
end.
On, and Letterman is one of the consultants on the show and actually kind of executive producing or some capacity as
called
a consultant.
Actually, I saw that, yeah. And at the end, are they still doing jokes? Because Norm MacDonald reads terrible jokes.
Yeah, they read terrible jokes. Or they make the guests read jokes.
Yeah, right. So it's the same format as the YouTube show.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Okay.
Yeah. I recommend those two things.
Okay. And
also, we got everybody's talking about Parasite. Parasite's going
to
win best foreign film.
Before we get
film,
to that,
blah,
I
blah,
want
blah.
To talk about Corpus. I want somebody to talk about Bergoglio's Corpus Christi.
Yeah, that's exactly where I'm going.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Go on.
Jesus Christ.
No, I thought we were holding the Academy Award nomination till the end, so I just want
to
get
No, I'm just saying that Yeah, okay, so here, let's get into that conversation. There's a movie, you remember last year, the Polish entry that I said deserves to win over Roma? Does anyone remember what that was called? It was Cold War, and I feel like this is the same thing all over again.
That was flawed.
Parasite is the 800-pound gorilla in the room. HBO is doing an American version of it, which seems it's a boneheaded move. Can I say that they're going to make an American version of Parasite? But my point is, Parasite is the slam dunk.
That is an idiotic
with Adam McKay. It's a slam dunk that Parasite's going to win Best Foreign Picture. But that doesn't mean, like last year, that there aren't other really good movies. And the one I'm going to recommend is Corpus Christi, again from Poland. Basically, a kid gets out of juvenile detention. He goes, this is going to remind you of a famous movie. He goes to a small Polish town and he portrays a father. He's a reverend, a pastor. And he, through an interesting turn of events, he gets to actually be the pastor at this small town church. Where there has
what
been a tragedy.
What movie is it reminding me of?
Well, there's an old movie called
Gare?
We're No Angels.
Well, there's also Return of Martin Gere, where the nerdy guy goes off to war and he comes back and he's like the coxman of the town. And he's like, is this the real guy?
This is but this guy is, it's more like We're No Angels, or what was the one with De Niro and Sean Penn, where
they were getting out of...
Okay, so it's kind of like that, but it's much more serious. And really, really well done.
We're
I mean,
no
this
angels,
kid.
The beginning of the decline of the movie choices of Robert De Niro. There you go.
So I recommend it, Corpus Christi.
Well,
and that pretty much sums it up. There was so much to talk about.
Let's talk about the Academy Award nominations. Okay. So I think McCuddy and I were talking that day, and I kind of agree with you, Bill. I think it's kind of over for The Irishman. Between that and the Critics' Choice Awards, they're not showing much love to this film.
Thelma, who turns 80 today, is Thelma it's her birth.
Schumacher.
Schumacher.
Oh, Schumacher. Okay.
No, Thelma Ritter. Let's make it even more obtuse.
How about Louise?
She
Thelma and Louise.
She got an, but she got an editing award because everybody knew it was 7 hours, and she got it down to 3.5 hours. It was my joke.
But so, there's a whole thing going on with Netflix here. I mean, Netflix didn't win for Roma last year, and
yes, they did.
They didn't win the bet. They were lobbying for Best Picture. That was what they were spending all that money on. Mm. So they decided we're going to win an Oscar this year, and they just sent us
Well, I have a newsflash for you. They're going to have that decision every year that they're going to win an Oscar. That's in their business.
But here's
plan.
The thing: Marriage Story doesn't look like it. You know, if you look at the Golden Globe winners and you look at the Critics' Choice winners, other than Laura Dern for Marriage Story, the big Netflix films, Marriage Story, The Irishman, and Dolomite, which got completely shut out.
Yeah, that
of the
was.
Oscar
we were
nomination.
Talking about how surprising that was
and,
on the
and Eddie Murphy
costumes
was on,
at
was
least
on the, yeah,
should have gotten
was on the cusp. But as you just said, costumes. Not only did that win the Critics' Choice Awards, and I think that was an amazing job of doing those pimp outfits and you know those great 70s outfits. She
how funny was Taye Diggs in that pimp outfit? Yeah. Wow.
Ha ha.
Wow.
she was really snubbed. I mean. She deserved to win and doesn't even get nominated. So the whole Netflix thing is just kind of, they're kind of like.
Well, I mean, they make the movies and the public decides.
Do you think that the voters are a little prejudiced against the fact that they're not getting traditional movie releases?
Of course I do. Of course I think old members are concerned about.
Because 1917 gets a traditional release and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is a traditional released movie.
Well, 1917 now looks like it's a real contender. Yeah. I mean, it's as far as I'm, as we sit here today.
And Joker is a traditional.
Before the SAGs and before anything else that's left to happen. The BAFTAs,
the SAGs, I guess, is really the last thing.
I really, and the Producers Guild, I think it's now between 1917. No, Producers Guild. Okay. I think it's between. That's the one that's always been the best indicator of Best Picture. I think it's
1917
and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah,
those are the two front runners right now.
Well, we will have our Oscar prediction show, but I'm telling you that Hollywood always votes for the movie about Hollywood. Look at The Artist, a movie that I liked and you don't like, McCuddy. Look at Singing in the Rain. They always love Argo. They always love the movies that celebrate Hollywood in some ways. But 1917 is the more traditional pick. I mean, it's a World War I epic, and it's innovative in terms of its directorial style with the camera movement and stuff. So I don't know. We'll see. But you're right. I think Irishman's fading. Scorsese for Best Director is fading. You know, De Niro didn't even get nominated, which he got nominated for Golden Globe, and didn't he get nominated for Critics' Choice?
Hey, they got nominated, and Greta Gerwig didn't, so we haven't even mentioned that.
So yeah. How much is this going to be? Are we going to hear? Is it going to be as much of a headline grabbing, entertainment headline grabbing event of being Oscars so white and Oscars no women this year as it was a few years ago? When it became this major.
I don't know. I think the movies are the movies. I'm getting tired of the politically correct driving the car. I mean, I don't want horrific films made, but I want people to just go to the movies and like what they like. And yeah, I think it's a big mistake that Greta Gerwig didn't get a nomination. But there are a lot of people who don't like that movie, who think that she adapted the screenplay well, but she didn't direct it well. So I don't agree with that, but I understand, like, if
Jojo
real,
Rabbit got
you know,
a lot
if
of
there's
love.
Real, I love that Jojo Rabbit got a lot of love. If there's real neutrality between the sexes, we shouldn't care whether they're men or women are nominated.
Well, do you think that
but
the
that
Oscar
day isn't
so,
here yet?
Do you
so,
think that there's going to be a big Oscar so white?
I think there already is
boycott.
About
like
it.
They, remember, they were, some, there was some boycott.
I don't think there's going to be a boycott.
Well, no. A lot of performers didn't show up, and then the other year. Chris Rock hosted, and they went the other direction. They were like very, you know, because there's a lot of nominees.
Just the fact that we're having a conversation about they went this direction or they went that direction is really screwy. I mean, it's not, you know, the I think the Academy will say, just these are the movies we like. When everybody gets younger.
I think Dolomite got screwed, and I think the woman who designed those costumes really got screwed. And Uncut Gems, which is, you know, I think that was unnecessarily, that got no nominations at all, you know.
And but Jonathan Pryce got a nomination.
Good. Yeah.
No. I'm just saying that those are were the bumpers, the people that bumped out people like Adam Sandler. I'm not sure Adam Sandler was ever going to get an Oscar nomination, but if he was, it was the Pryce nomination that cost him there. That movie had a nice surge. I thought it was a great film, and I just thought it had been forgotten. And you're talking about Netflix films, and that's one of them. So that one's actually that he could win Best Actor.
Yeah, well,
he could maybe beat Joker.
Yeah.
What could beat Joker? I'm sorry,
Jonathan Pryce in the two.
No,
pups.
I think that Joaquin Phoenix is the odds on favorite, but I think Adam Driver gave the best performance. I mean, for my money, I don't think he's going to win, but he was the odds on. He was the front runner like a couple of months.
They don't
ago.
Like him as much as they like Scarlett, obviously, because they nominated her in two places.
But to your point, McCuddy, he gives shitty acceptance speeches.
He cleaned it up a little for the Critics' Choice, but I think, there's a real question mark for me about whether or not elderly Academy members even sat through all of the Joker. And now they're going to have to definitely make a decision. And the couple I've talked to think he gives a good performance, but they're not voting for him.
Well, I don't. I think there's better performances in that category. I think the performances...
This is the Oscar show we're not doing until next week.
Okay, so we'll talk. Well, no, we're not doing that show until the week of the Oscars. But all right, before we go, you said you wanted to talk about Robert Klein on Seinfeld.
Oh, that was another one of my quick hits. Yeah, he also does Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. And it's really kind of sweet to see Jerry with one of his absolute mentor idols. Not like he never did Johnny Carson, but not like Don Rickles or something where he's liked him and respected him, but this is the guy in Robert Klein that absolutely talked Seinfeld into a career, and he makes no bones about it. So there's a lot of good stories. One of the funniest things is they're driving around. I think Klein lives somewhere in...
He lives in Sleepy Hollow.
Upstate New York, like on the river or something, and they're driving around and they go, everybody says... they live exactly this many minutes from New York City. I can get to New York in 49 minutes. Everyone, they have a couple of bits that they sort of concoct themselves together, which is really kind of cool. And they tell some great old stories about Jay Leno, about the Tonight Show, about just in general, working colleges. It's great. I highly recommend it.
All right. Well, to me, in the 70s, My Child of the 50s, that album, which won a Grammy, and I believe his second album also won a Grammy, Mind Over Matter. To me, I think those are the two greatest comedy albums.
He was very close to Richard Pryor, and he was very, very close to Rodney Dangerfield. Rodney. He and Rodney like hung together for like
Please
11
tell
years.
Me that
he opened for him.
Tell that story, which he keeps telling on every talk show about how he saved Rodney Dangerfield from drowning. Please tell me.
No, he doesn't. They show a picture of them in the swimming pool together, but he doesn't, or they cut that out. I'll tell you the headline here, which I didn't say, is like Robert Klein's still really funny. He's got it. He's not just the I can't stop my foot from shaking guy. He's
nice to hear.
He and I don't know, maybe they shot for 6 hours and cut in the tight 22 minutes out of it, but he's all there, and it's funny.
Okay.
They go to Sing Sing, and I won't tell you what happens there.
Well, that's an Ossining. I think he lives right near
there. Yeah.
Well, you recommended the Lorne Michaels thing to me last week with Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, and I watched it, so now I will watch this.
Thank you.
And what do we got next week?
We have The Gentleman. Guy Ritchie movie.
Hugh Grant. Another Guy Ritchie movie.
Yeah.
Well, Hugh has a smaller part in it. It's
it's that guy who sells Lincoln Mercury's on TV.
Yeah,
that
Matthew
guy.
McConaughey's in it, and a couple of other people.
Oh,
but no, your ride's here now. Yeah, you got
to
go.
Oh, I have one more movie to talk about.
Oh, Jesus.
No, I do. I saw a movie. I'm sorry. I went to a screening of the movie. I did the junket. I must talk about this movie.
Contractually?
I saw the new Tyler Perry movie. It's called The Fall from Grace. And, man, is that a bad movie. I got to tell you something. It's on Netflix. It is not getting a theatrical release. It is with Felicia Rashad, and who is in prison. Whether or not she's claiming her innocence. She actually wants to take the plea deal. All she really wants, a lawyer visits her, a young lawyer right out of law school,
played by
this firm,
the brilliant.
I cannot. It's a newcomer, and I'm sorry. I can't. I can't recall her name.
And the screenplay is by the up and coming.
But Tyler Perry is running the law firm. And he says to her, she just wants to take a plea deal. Just go there and get her signature on the plea deal. All she wants is that she's up for murder, that she wants
Remember, you said this is bad, so we don't really need a long explanation.
Well, I'm almost done. She wants the prison to be near where her son lives so her son could visit her, you know.
Seems like a reasonable request.
And as the young new lawyer discovers, she says all is not what it should be. This woman is, you know, covering up for somebody and willing to spend her life in jail for some reason.
Now you got a movie. And
Tyler Perry is obstinate and says, look, she's guilty. Just let's get this thing over with. We don't have the money in this firm to, like, take this to trial and blah, blah, blah. And shit happens along the way. And it is so ridiculous what happens, which I will not divulge in case you do decide to see it on Netflix. But it is just so... People walked out of that screening just rolling their eyes. Like, you'd look at people, you wouldn't even ask what you think. It was like, it was kind
of. Well,
like,
name names. Who are some of these people?
You just look at people and they would just be like, oh. Like, it was ridiculous.
So, this isn't Netflix's Oscar next year.
So, the title of the movie, A Fall from Grace, is a pun because Grace is the character who's sitting in jail and who wants to take the plea deal and is, you know, her lawyer is finding out that there's more to this that she's covering up from somebody. And her neighbor, who can kind of testify that she did not murder this person, is played by Felicia Rashad. And Tyler Perry is the owner of the law firm.
And who's the girl that's in prison?
And that's Crystal Fox's Grace, is the one who's in prison. And Cicely Tyson makes a cameo appearance in the film as well.
For a nice room at the Ritz Buckhead in Atlanta. I mean, that's the only reason anybody goes to these Tyler Perry productions.
And Brescia Webb plays the lawyer, the young lawyer. And it's, you know, it's just an awful film. It's just awful. There's so many twists and turns that if you really stop to think about them, or you don't even have to stop and think about them, you just go, this is just ludicrous.
Even Neo was confused. Yeah. All right.
So there you go. So next week we've got The Gentleman. Uh-huh. And what else do we have?
That's about it.
Well, anyway, if you want to reach out to me, you can reach out to me on Twitter at Neil Rosenapples. If you want to reach out to Bill Bregoli,
he's on Instagram.
Yeah, that's right. Sometimes.
We're as stunned as you are. And I'm at Bill McCuddy on Twitter.
Right. And what do
we watch the bad movies so you don't have to. And we get to watch a lot more of them in January than we really want to.
Yes. And thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll sit around talking movies again with you next week.